Today on the Success Journal, a man invents an exercise machine and muscles his way to the top. And we'll talk with a woman who started a business at the kitchen table and is now worth millions. She says any woman who wants to do the same can follow her example and be a success.
Nobody will believe in you at first, and you need to, you know, find the power to believe in yourself and take that passion with you into the marketplace with your product. I remember people told me I was crazy.
Then, we all want to be happy. An expert says just being a little happier can make you more successful at your job.
Happiness is actually the greatest predictor of success in the workplace. Happiness is actually a precursor to success. It happens before the success.
Plus, a man sells a fruit drink and juices up his income. All that coming up today on The Success Journal.
The Success Journal. Inspiring success stories. Informative advice from leading experts. Helpful, practical tips to improve your life, enhance your career, and save you time and money. The Success Journal with Chris Whitting.
Hey, welcome to our third podcast. We're on a roll here. And if you've just joined us, welcome. If you've listened before, welcome back. Speaking of being on a roll, here's a Success Journal story to start out about a guy who bulked up his bankroll. A young man named Tess came to America to attend college. Now, he could easily afford it because his family was rich. But while he was at school here in the USA, there was political unrest overseas, and in the turmoil, his father died. The family lost everything. Stranded in the States, Tess began driving a cab to make ends meet. He also began racking his brain for a way to improve his life. Then one day, he had a sudden idea for an exercise machine. It took him a long time to perfect it, but once it was shown on TV, orders poured in. I'm sure you know the product created by Tess Schifferaw, the Bowflex machine. The Bowflex has earned millions, earning Tess Schifferaw lots of financial muscle. Today, he's a real heavyweight. Now, one thing Tess had on his side was desperation. He needed to turn things around, and that kept him very focused. But if you sometimes lose your focus or procrastinate, here are four tips to help you stick with it. The first one is surround yourself with color. Color psychology can actually play a big role in motivating your behavior. A study published by Frontiers in Human Neuroscience found the color red has been shown to increase attentiveness. And a study by the University of British Columbia found blue can boost your creativity. Another tip, and this sounds a little crazy, take a shower. It's hard to explain why, but research proves it works. It's like cleaning off your workspace, except you're cleaning off yourself, ready to start anew. Here's another tip. Take a break and spend some time with big winners. Being around people who get things done will definitely rub off on you. And last but not least, try getting up earlier in the day. Knocking off a few tasks first thing in the morning is positive reinforcement, and it will get your motivation going. Our next guest is somebody who really gets things done. She calls herself a self-made mommy millionaire. Kim Levine, welcome to the Success Journal podcast.
Hi, thanks for having me, Chris.
Kim, you turned a simple idea into a multi-million dollar business while raising two kids, and you've written a book called Mommy Millionaire. Tell us about those early days and how you started your business.
Well, it was just over 5 years ago, and I was looking for a unique gift to give to my kids' teachers for a Christmas present. And my husband was feeding deer in the backyard, and he left this bag of feed corn next to my sewing machine. And I had heard of rice and socks, and I'd seen products in the marketplace with flaxseed and herbs that you heated in the microwave, and they, you know, were spa therapy pillows. And I thought, well, corn is a grain. What would happen if I put corn in a bag? So I did it. I gave it away as Christmas presents. Next thing I knew, I had strangers calling me from all over the city. And a neighbor of mine who was in marketing for a major national retailer said, you got a great product. You got to take it to the market.
Wow. And then I guess, as they say, the rest is history. And
wrong.
But there were a lot of steps in between that and becoming successful.
Right. The most notable of which was my husband lost his job. Mm. He came home one day and told me not only did he not have a job, but his industry was in dire straits and the likelihood of getting another job that would pay the kind of wage that we needed to maintain our standard of living was probably next to nil. So here I was, a stay-at-home mom, out of the workforce for 5 years with 2 and 4-year-old boys and a $200,000 mortgage, trying to figure out a way how to support my family.
Stepping back from your story, which is a great one, do you have an idea as to how many women out there have a dream of or want to start a business? I mean, you mentioned how many women are in business. It's a huge number, right?
There are 11 million women entrepreneurs in America right now. That's 40% of all businesses. And women are starting businesses at 2 times the rate of men. The U.S. Census Bureau says that by 2025, 55% of all businesses will be owned by women. They're looking for new opportunities to balance their careers with family life. And I tell women there's never been a better time to have it all. Technology has revolutionized the work and family life for us forever. And I can make peanut butter and jelly sandwiches at my kitchen table and email China my production specs at the same time. So can they.
Some people think, gee, having a business at home would be really difficult with the dog barking and the doorbell ringing. And how did you deal with that starting out?
You know, I tell people, work out of your house for as long as possible. You don't even need a brick and mortar store anymore. You can sell product in Mexico from your home. Bill Gates started in his garage. The guys who founded Google are still working on the sawhorse desk they started out on. So you can too. Rule number one is don't apologize for having kids. Rule number two is if I can outyell my kids for 15 minutes, you can outyell yours. And rule number three is your kids are probably in no danger of dying while you outyell them for 15 minutes. It's provided your house is childproofed, of course. So you just have to learn to embrace chaos and balance the career goals you have with your family goals.
There are many possible mistakes you can make. There are many traps you can fall into. And often people starting out make all those mistakes. Just talk about some of the things that happened to you.
Oh, I made so many mistakes. You know, I think, of course, overcapitalization up front, which is the number one reason I personally saw most businesses fail, which means they spent too much money to make too little money, which goes back to my saying, work out of your home for as long as you can. And I think most importantly, the biggest mistakes I made in my experience were my underestimation of people. You know, you can never completely control the motivations or the actions of people around you. And I found a couple of techniques I used to more critically evaluate people and take emotion out of business decisions. And another really important thing I see reason businesses fail is rapid and undisciplined growth. And I tell entrepreneurs, there's never a shortage of ideas or opportunities or even sales. Eventually, what's always in critical shortage is cash. And nobody's teaching anybody how to look for cash.
So you spread yourself too thin, you're going to run into problems there.
And I've seen a lot of businesses fail that way. 40% of all businesses will fail in the first 4 years.
Our guest is Kim Levine, self-made millionaire, entrepreneur, and author of Mommy Millionaire. Have you heard about this free guide you can download that contains a list of top tools to make your business more efficient, secure, and profitable? And best of all, this Ultimate Business Toolbox Guide is now available to anyone absolutely free. How do you get it? Simply visit freebusinesstoolbox.com. Grab your free copy while they last. This guide has some of the very same online tools that we at Success Journal use every day in our business, and we recommend them. Yeah, we do know that some sites offer you a special deal on something, and then they stick you in some recurring program or some other deal. Well, this isn't like that. There's no hidden thing to try. BrightBiz is literally giving away this business toolbox completely free, as a way of putting their best foot forward. But this is a limited time offer, so grab your free guide today and take your business and your income to the next level. Simply visit freebusinesstoolbox.com and get your free guide to 36 business power tools. Kim, speaking of business, every business needs some capital to get started. How does someone find that money at the very beginning?
It's never been a better time to find capital for a couple of reasons. Number one, the easiest place to find capital is credit cards. Almost every millionaire I know has started their business on credit cards. If you have good credit, you can get as much as 0% interest. There's two kinds of debt. There's good debt and bad debt, because people are afraid of running up $20,000 of debt on their credit cards, which I think is the minimum you need to invest in a business. But good debt generates revenue. Bad debt consumes revenue. As long as you have that good debt registered to your corporation or your limited LLC, you know, it's not personal debt. Think of it as an investment in your business. And then, of course, there's SBA loans. And another favorite of mine is a home equity line of credit, which you borrow against only when you need it. And of course, that interest is tax deductible. But the real story is angel capital. There's $20 billion available every year from angel investors, and it's growing exponentially every year. These are high net worth individuals licensed by the Security and Exchange Commission who have one job, and that is to invest in companies to stimulate economic growth and development in their communities. Last year, out of the $20 billion, only 3% went to women-owned businesses. And the Kauffman Foundation last year issued a command to angel investors to invest in women-owned businesses. So there's never been a better time for women to raise this capital.
There are many business opportunities presented out there, these turnkey deals where you maybe become a sales rep and your garage is full of products you're selling for a company, or maybe you're part of a network marketing type thing. Are those any good? I mean, what do you think of that?
I think it's always better. Best to be in business for yourself. There's product businesses like mine where you have to manufacture, sell, and distribute an item, which can require a lot of capital. Or there's service businesses where you might just sell your personal services for party planning or concierge service. And then, of course, there's franchises. I think if you're going to start a business that's already has some leverage behind it, a franchise might be the best way to go. You have the take advantage of national marketing and brand awareness. But I think the largest opportunity for return is any business that you start yourself.
Kim, you talk a lot about getting a mentor and having a good advisor. How do you go about finding somebody like that?
Besides SCORE, there's the Small Business Development Centers, and you can find them by going to sba.sbdc.gov. These are really serious business people who are at major universities in every state in the United States. And not only will they help you write a business plan, maybe they'll even get a graduate student to do it for you for college credit. And then they'll guide you along every step of the way.
We'll ask Kim for that web address again at the end of our interview. But now, you mentioned something called the 20,000 rule. What is that?
$20,000 is the minimum you're going to need to start any business. And I know there are people out there who will tell you that they started $1 million businesses on, you know, a free sewing machine they had, but that's not true. And the whole purpose of my book is to bust those myths.
What was your family's attitude toward you doing all this? And obviously, they're probably thrilled now, but I mean, what did they think initially?
Nobody believed in me. And I want to caution entrepreneurs, nobody will believe in you at first. And you need to, you know, find the power to believe in yourself and take that passion with you into the marketplace with your product. I remember people told me I was crazy. When you look at it in a savvy perspective right now, I can say, geez, my product appealed to everybody in America. There's 300 million people living in America. Even if I only sell to 1% of those 300 million, that's 3 million times $25 retail value. That's a $75 million market, even for a common little household, you know, consumer product. So if you look at it like that, you can see money anywhere.
Well, any last words for our listeners on becoming a mommy millionaire?
I would say understand that children are special angels from heaven that God gave you, and you can do both things. You can be a mom and an entrepreneur or business person at the same time.
Well, you have a website, which is mommymillionaire.com. That's easy to remember. And what was the SCORE website you mentioned?
It's SCORE, SCORE.org.
Kim Levine, Mommy Millionaire. Thanks for joining us today on the Success Journal podcast.
I had a great time talking to you. Thank you for having me.
Still to come, an interview that will make you happy. You'll hear how being happier can make you far more successful. If you're looking for world-class website hosting at a fair price, use the company we use at Success Journal, Pear Networks. Pear Networks hosts hundreds of thousands of websites. And why do we recommend them? simply because they set the standard for excellence with a technical support staff that's second to none. Their support team responds fast, and they always give straight answers, and that's important. Plus, they have top-of-the-line technology, and therefore, they can offer you total reliability for your website with a money-back guarantee. So, whether you're a professional web designer, a busy web marketer, or you're somebody who's an entrepreneur just getting your site online, Pear Networks has a web hosting plan that's right for you. Log on and learn more at pear.com. That's P-A-I-R.com. Pear Networks. Did you know your attitude may affect your career success? Our next guest is Harvard University Professor of Psychology, Sean Acor. He is author of The Happiness Advantage, The 7 Principles of Positive Psychology That Fuel Success and Performance at Work. Professor, what's the correlation between being happy and being successful?
Well, what we found is happiness is actually the greatest predictor of success in the workplace, although we thought that the order worked in the opposite way. We thought that if somebody is really successful, then they'll be paid more, then maybe they'd be happier, they'd feel better about their successes. But what we found is that when your brain is positive, you have a 31% increase in your productivity. Your creativity increases by threefold. You're able to work on projects longer and be more engaged. Happiness is actually a precursor to success. It happens before the success. So what we found is that happiness is actually the greatest competitive advantage for a company in the modern economy.
So it sounds like your happiness has a profound effect on your job success. Do you have any idea how much other factors, such as intelligence and know-how, factor into workplace success?
We've been researching to find out what predicts success. And before, we thought it was your intelligence. So it turns out, though, that if I know your IQ, your intelligence, I can only predict 25% of your job successes over the next 5 years. 75% of it is a mystery to scientists if all we have is your intelligence, which is, of course, how we hire, how we train people, how we educate people. 75% of it is based upon three other factors, all related to the happiness advantage. The first is the belief that your behavior matters, your optimism. If you believe your behavior matters, you keep going in the midst of challenge and you keep working towards those goals. When you lose that, you actually lose the ability to make forward progress. The second is your social support network at home and with your family. So that's your coworkers, your family members, your friends. If you feel you have high quality relations with them, it skyrockets your success. The third one is that we found that every single employee I've researched feels stress, but some people view stress as a challenge, which turns on the human brain. And some people view it as a threat, which actually actively turns off the human brain.
So what are some ways we might bring happiness into our lives and into our work?
Well, the very first thing I think we need to do is to prioritize happiness. I think we keep putting off happiness. I'll feel happier when I get that promotion or when I get that job. It turns out scientifically that that order doesn't work. You're not happier once you have a success. But if you're happier, you do have greater levels of success. So what I would suggest is to start with creating one positive habit, something you know that creates happiness in your life. Based upon our research, we know that things like meditation, exercise, writing down three things you're grateful for each day, or journaling about a positive experience, even writing a positive email once a day to somebody in your social support network can actually dramatically increase your happiness in just a period of 21 days, which actually has effects even 6 months and a year down the road in terms of raising your productivity and helping you deal with the stresses and the workload that you actually experience.
When I think about what might generate happiness for people at work, the word vacation comes to mind. Does that play a part in all this?
It is. Well, we do want people to take their vacations. People that don't take their vacations, not only does their happiness plummet, but so does their productivity. I think both the employee and the company have a vested interest in making sure people have fun vacations. But the other side of it is if you're unhappy at work, chances are you're going to be unhappy on vacation because you're taking your same brain with you. Part of my research is about how you can train the brain to actually be more optimistic. So the way that you're training your brain at work will change the way that you look at the hotel you're in on your vacation or the resort that you go to. Will you be looking for the negative things first, or will you be looking for the positive things first? If you train your brain to look for the positive, not only do you find more things to be grateful for, you actually start to scan the environment for more possibilities. We found that individuals that seem to be luckier are ones who actually have an optimistic mindset because their brain has extra resources scanning the world for how do I make this a better place.
Our guest is Professor Sean Acor of Harvard University, talking about his book, The Happiness Advantage. Professor, what if you have a boss who takes away your happiness? In other words, maybe they drive you crazy or they yell at you or whatever. How do you deal with that and try to stay happy?
It's a very difficult situation. We do know that bosses have a huge impact upon your health. In fact, a recent study that just came out suggests that up to 30% of your chances of heart disease can be predicted by the manager-employee relationship. If you have a bad relationship that's increasing stress on a daily basis between you and your boss, that's actually impacting your health. While that's true, the other side of the formula is that only 10% of your long-term happiness is predicted by the outside world, where you live, how much money you make, even who your boss is. 90% of it is how your brain processes that world. We do know that there are some bosses where not a single employee at that company is happy. But we also know some where one employee will say, my boss is terrible, and the next one is able to get along with the boss or is able to ignore the negative influences. What I would suggest with somebody who has a toxic boss, the very first thing you should do is to realize that happiness is actually not within your boss's control, it's within your control. Even things like smiling when your boss is being negative, bringing up the optimistic side of things when the boss is bringing up the pessimistic side, while it seems like you're not having any effect, you actually are. There are small parts of your brain called mirror neurons, so that when you smile, your boss's brain is lighting up on a brain scan showing that he's starting to smile as well, even though it never touches his face. So dopamine is being released into his system. It's a pleasure drug. The point of that is that you're actually having an effect back and forth. And if you assume that the relationship only goes one direction, that the negative boss can affect you, that's exactly what will happen. So what I get people to do at companies where they're struggling with a manager is I get them, first of all, to not be surprised by it. A lot of the negativity we feel is that we're like, whoa, I can't believe my boss did this. But the second thing to do is to scan the environment for things that still make you positive despite that boss. What that does is it inoculates you against the challenges of having something as negative as a boss on a daily basis.
Physical exercise seems to be a mood elevator. How does that factor into this when most office workers tend to sit in a chair all day long?
Well, if you're going to sit in a chair all day long, what I absolutely suggest is exercising before you go into the office. What we know is that exercise creates a cascade of success for the human brain. Because once you exercise, let's say in the morning, for the rest of the day, you know that your behavior has been useful, right? You know that your behavior has mattered. You've been a success at the beginning. So when you tackle an email or when you're working on a project, your brain imports that belief that your behavior matters to that new domain. So I would suggest exercising. If you can't get to exercise early in the morning before going into work, I would suggest making sure that every 90 minutes you take a break. That's what we call a cognitive break, where you get up out of your chair, you stand up, you go talk to a coworker, you go walk outside. We actually even found that if you walk outside up to 3 times a day, your productivity increases at work. If you do it more than 3, you're never at your desk, so your productivity actually starts to decrease. What we found, though, is if you can take the time to actually start to exercise to get the blood flowing, what you're doing is not only releasing neurochemicals that can make you happier, but much more importantly, you're training your brain to show that your behavior matters and that you can have some control on the outcomes in your life. That you then take back to work so that you can get your work done even faster and get home, see your kids, or to exercise once you get home.
Sean Acor, Harvard University professor of psychology, who says be happy and you will be more successful. And his book is The Happiness Advantage. Professor, thank you for joining us on the Success Journal podcast.
Thank you so much. It's been an honor.
Hope you're feeling happy now. And let's squeeze one more quick story into this Success Journal podcast. You never know what life holds. And that was certainly true for an immigrant named Tony Rossi. Tony came to the States to get rich quick, but life had other plans. Tony ended up running a food store in New York City. Years later, he hopped a plane to settle down in the Florida sunshine. There, Tony tried selling baskets filled with citrus fruit, and he squeezed fresh orange juice for his customers who raved about its flavor and purity. So he started selling the juice to New York grocers and he gave it a brand name you may recognize, Tropicana. Tony even dreamed up a girl with oranges on her head, and he named her Tropic Anna, and she's still on the label. Tropicana helped Tony squeeze out a fortune and earn some very juicy profits. And that's a wrap for this edition of The Success Journal. If you enjoyed listening, please tell a friend about us. We'll see you next time right here on The Success Journal podcast. I'm Chris Whitting. Thanks for listening.